Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. She is known for a body of journalistic work that reflects compassion, humanity, and an abiding concern for the underdog. Let's take note with Connie Schultz, a Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for The Plain Dealer in Cleveland and the author of two books from Random House, Life Happens, and His Lovely Wife, a memoir from the woman beside the man. The book chronicles the 2006 Senate campaign of her husband, Sherrod Brown, now the junior senator from Ohio. Schultz is at Penn State for the College of Communications Foster Conference of Distinguished Writers, which brings award-winning journalists to campus to share their experience with students, faculty, and the public. Connie Schultz, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Patty.
You declared many times, especially as you chronicled your experience as a wife on the campaign trail, I'm a writer. That's who I am. That's what I am. And so I was surprised when I read that you actually started off pursuing a law degree and then transferred to Kent State to pursue a journalism degree. When did you realize that you wanted to be a writer?
Well, actually, I went to Kent State first. I was a journalism major, went to law school afterwards and dropped out. And I was on Law Review. I always feel the need to say this because some bloggers say I flunked out, and that's not true. But I got into journalism in a way that, I would love to be able to say, well, I always wanted to be a writer. But I grew up in a working class family, and I was the first in my family to go to college. And I didn't know until I sat down with my guidance counselor that you could love what you do for a living, because my father was a factory worker who hated his job for 36 years that he was in it. And my mom was a stay-at-home mom and then became a nurse's aide and a hospice home care worker. Both my parents died in their 60s. They wore their bodies out. What happened for me was I had great English scores. I thought I was going to be a social worker. The guidance counselor said, you're going to wear out pretty quickly doing that, Connie. And then he looked at my scores and said, have you ever thought about journalism? And he looked at me because he could tell I looked stunned. And he said, you better love what you're going to do for a living because you're going to be doing it for a long time. And I've never wanted to do anything but that ever since.
One of your father's crowning achievements, as far as he was concerned, is the fact that his four children did go to college.
Right.
And what he wanted for you was that you'd have a career and not a job.
That's exactly right. And when I would ask him, especially towards the end of his life, he died at age 69 during my husband's Senate race. I would try to get him to tell me more about his career because I wanted his lunch pail so that I could put it next to my desk as a reminder of what he had gone through for me. And he couldn't find the lunch pail for the longest time. And he always said to me, it was a job, Connie. It was not a career. And he really didn't want to talk about it. At all.
He read your columns, though. And in fact, when you went out on the campaign trail, your first book, which was really a compilation of your best columns, when it came out, there were lots and lots of columns that were about him.
Yeah.
And people wanted to meet him.
Well, I had written extra essays for the book to kind of link the various chapters. And I was a little nervous about it because I was pretty honest about how my dad felt about his job and how he often felt like a nobody in the world because of what he did for a living and how he was treated on the job. And so I'll never forget this. It was the last lengthy conversation we had before the day he died. And he said, well, a lot of people have been coming up to me and telling me they've read about me in your book. And I said, well, how do you feel about that, Dad? And he got really quiet and he said, well, I figure if they can see how hard it was for me and they can see their own story in that, but then they see how you turned out, I think I'm glad I told my story. And I got so emotional, I had to walk away. I'll never forget that moment.
Anyone who reads your book is going to get emotional. It's humorous. It's poignant. It's so many things. And when Sherrod decided that he was going to run, there's an interesting story in the book about West Wing, an episode of West Wing that you were
season
watching.
Season 2, episodes 1 and 2.
They're inspirational episodes. There's so much in this book, and you'll have to read it to get all of the stories, but you knew you were going to write a book early in the campaign. Tell me a little bit about how you were going to write it. How did you know? You knew you were going to do it, but how did you know how you would do it?
Well, it really helped to have the book, and it wasn't my idea, actually. Anna Quinlan called our editor, Kate Medina. We both have the same editor at Random House. And Anna's been very supportive of my career. And as soon as she found out Sherrod was running, she said, Sherrod Brown's running for the Senate? She says, well, I know whose book I want to read, and it ain't the candidate. So Kate Medina took this giant leap of faith, assuming my husband would win a race that everyone was saying he was not going to win. And I signed before the campaign really had just started to pick up steam. It was, I think, March when I knew I was going to write it. And so I just filled, it was probably more than a foot high of Moleskine notebooks by the end of it. And I just, you know, I had gone from writing a column. I took a leave of absence to avoid a conflict of interest. I had all these thoughts, all these feelings, and nowhere to put it. So I put it all in the pages of the Moleskines. And then I spent about, right after the election, right after, I spent about 3 weeks outlining the book. And then I wrote 80,000 words in about 6 weeks. And that was how I did the first draft.
And you said in the book you went from a colleague to a source almost overnight.
Overnight.
That must have been a very funny feeling.
It was excruciating because I had colleagues who were, you know, I worked for the largest paper in the state, and that was before I was syndicated. So my world was the Plain Dealer. And it was hard to watch some of them not quite know what to say to me, how to be around me. They were trying to respect the personal space and the friendships that we had forged, but they also were very aware that nobody knows the candidate better than the spouse. And it was just untenable.
And this was a new spouse. You had only been married a short period.
And
in fact, many would say you were still in the honeymoon phase when you made a pact. He's going to do this.
Right.
You're going to be beside him. Not every wife follows her husband. It's usually a wife following a husband on the campaign trail.
Right. And honeymoon was over almost immediately because within 2 weeks of his deciding to run, somebody tried to steal our trash. And I looked out. We had just moved to this community, and they were two men in suits. And I thought, wow, they really do it differently when they pick up trash here. And then it dawned on me they were in an unmarked van, and they're looking around to see if anybody's watching them. And I thought, oh, my God, they're stealing our trash. So I'm, you know, screaming out the front door, put down the bags. So they did. And I thought, oh, my Lord, here we are. This is the campaign.
Now, you knew from the moment that the book you were going to write wasn't going to be one of these feel-good spouse books that have been written, you know, in the past. Were there things, though, that were off-limits, things that you just will not touch?
You know, the only things I would say are off-limits are there are certainly intimate moments in a marriage. Although I was pretty candid about some of the times when Cher was feeling particularly vulnerable, when we both were feeling vulnerable, and how the race actually brought us closer. There's not a lot that I kept out of the book. Although I will say there were moments, especially when he still had a primary opponent, and I didn't like how he was treated at times, my husband. And I had it all in the book originally. And my editor, Kate Medina, says, we're taking this out, we're taking it. I said, Kate, I hate the way people behave. She goes, you told me about it. And I said, well, that's not enough. I want everyone to know. And she said something that's become the motto for my life. She says, Connie, no whining on the yacht. You won. You've got your job back. You got a great husband. She's exactly right.
It must have been to him, to Sherrod Brown at times, like traveling with a documentary filmmaker because he doesn't know what might be recorded and also what might take on some special meaning later on.
Yeah. Well, live mics are not a good idea for Sherrod Brown or for most candidates, especially when they're tired. So we learned fairly early that if he had a live mic, one of us was going to be with him. Not because he would say anything stupid. You just get exhausted. I mean, we were both in he was in his early 50s. I was in my late 40s when he's running. And, you know, we would do 7-8 events a day individually. And then on weekends, we'd be together the whole time doing events. And it does wear you out. And in this modern world, you know, we seldom listen to books on recording, but we're listening to a new book about Bobby Kennedy, and I feel really bad. I don't remember the author's name right offhand. It's called The Last Campaign. And one of the points the author makes, and he's right, some of the things that Bobby Kennedy said on the campaign trail, he could never have been successful as a candidate now because bloggers would have gotten hold of it. Video blogs, you know, YouTube videos, things can get blown out of proportion and they can get distorted so quickly. And you're dealing with the endless cycle on the internet then and on cable. None of that existed when Bobby Kennedy was running for president.
And bloggers were the bane of your existence at a number of occasions.
Yeah. I'm still trying to make my peace with some bloggers, but yes.
Some that you know by name.
Well, and yeah, that's exactly right. And I think that my issue always as a journalist is that bloggers want all the access of journalists but don't want to have any of the accountability.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. Our guest is Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist Connie Schultz. In 2006, she temporarily put her work as a syndicated columnist for The Plain Dealer on hold to campaign with her husband, Sherrod Brown, now the junior senator from Ohio. Her book, And His Lovely Wife, a memoir from the woman beside the man, chronicles her experiences on the campaign trail. I want to talk for just a minute more about the blogging. I thought it was interesting. the car you nicknamed Vegas, because the idea was this was one place where
what happened in Vegas stayed in Vegas. Yeah, because you need to decompress. I mean, you go to these events, and one of the things that would drive me nuts is if women, mostly women in this regard, would want to give me advice on what I should be doing with my hair or my clothes, or am I taking good care of my husband when, you know, you're exhausted. And it's really important that you have a place to decompress. Also, just what can happen during speeches. I mean, as I wrote about in the book, many men, older men, thought I should have changed my name when I married Sheridan. It came to a head for me when I got introduced as, well, Sherrod Brown's wife is here, but she's one of those ladies who won't change her name, so here she is. And he didn't even say my name. And it was 2 weeks after my father died. And I realized that I was giving the wrong reason for why I didn't change my name, because I would talk about how I was 46 when I married Sherrod. I had my own career. What I need to really talk about is Jane and Chuck Schultz, my parents, and why I was so proud to have this name. And I talked about how they always thought they were two nobodies, but they were going to raise four somebodies. And by the time I was done, the man who had introduced me that way came back up. This was at a chicken dinner in Southern Ohio with tears in his eyes and said, I love the name Schultz. Don't ever change the name Schultz. And it really freed me at that moment. I tell stories. That's what I do for a living. And I didn't need to change that about myself on the campaign trail. And I was going to all these communities that were like the community I came from, a small town full of people from Appalachia. And so I would go down to Southern Ohio, in Appalachia, in a lot of the working class towns, the rural areas, and I would talk to people who were the people I come from.
Interestingly enough, you do on paper what Sherrod does in politics, really. You have lots of shared values. And although you came from different backgrounds, he came from a very political family,
Well, very and privileged. I mean, his dad was a family doctor. All three of the boys, there were only three boys, went to Ivy League schools, very different from my background. They had college-educated parents, but I've often said, I mean, one of the reasons I fell in love with Sherrod is he had been fighting for the people I come from his entire career, and we do have the same values. I mean, there is no point getting married in middle age. I mean, we both have been longtime single parents. We knew how a marriage could go wrong. There is no point getting married in middle age unless you're crazy about each other. Otherwise, you're just nuts. It's not a good idea.
You say that the book really is a book about a marriage first and foremost.
Yes. And it's interesting. Sherrod was with me just the other day when someone came up and told me how entertaining she found the book. And then 5 minutes later, someone came up and said, I really admire the marriage you have. And people take different things from it. And I'm glad for that. I mean, I would like to think that you can get different things from reading any particular book, but certainly I'm glad that they feel that way about this book. But women in particular respond to the marriage in the book, and they're surprised by how candid I am. But anyone who knows me isn't really surprised by that.
The title, it's cheeky, it's funny. Were you introduced very often as his lovely wife?
Well, and you know the answer to that, Patty. That's how the title came up. I kept getting introduced that way. I think it was around the 50th time when they said, Sherrod Brown's here and his lovely wife. I thought, oh, they did not say that the first time that happened. So that's how it came up with the title. My favorite moment was when I was introduced as his lovely wife, Candy. They got the name wrong. And I just waved because I figured nobody cared who I was anyway.
Let's get back for a minute to Janie and Chuck Schultz and the name you kept, the surname that you kept. You mentioned Robert Kennedy a moment ago. Hanging in your house prominently was...
Oh, Jack Kennedy, the Jesus wall.
That's right.
Right, Jesus and Jack Kennedy.
And your father who told you, you know, you couldn't date a Republican or bankers.
Or a banker. Didn't know they were the same type until later, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your father.
My dad was a union activist. And so I grew up, I mean, it's funny, a relative gave us a CD of Pete Seeger songs for Christmas. And I'm hearing one song after another, realizing these are the songs of my childhood. We would stand on picket lines and sing, we shall not be defeated, we shall, you know, we would sing all these songs. I had no idea they were considered militant songs. So I grew up with the notion that you only achieve things as a group, that you cannot go out on your own as a lone ranger. You have to organize. It much to my father's dismay, I think, early in my adulthood, it certainly fueled my feminism. Because how could it possibly not make sense for me to also realize the power and influence of women who are united in a cause when I grew up with this notion that working people have to bond together because that's the only power they'll have?
Well, there are some who now say that the union has outlived its usefulness. How do you respond to them?
Well, I don't agree with that. And I think that what we're seeing in our current economic crisis is how important it is that we do have advocates for workers. You look at the disparity now between corporate salaries, the executive salaries, and everyone else. If that doesn't illustrate why we need people advocating for workers and we need workers united in a similar cause, I don't know what does.
You say that you're a good listener, you know how to ask the right questions. Beyond that, what does it take to be a good columnist?
I think there has to be a certain element of fearlessness to you because, as an example, I just wrote about Rush Limbaugh and how he claimed he couldn't understand why women didn't like him. Well, obviously, this is a ploy for attention, but I thought, all right, I'll bite. And let me tell you, Rush, a little bit about why this latest survey. The hate mail that comes, we allow online comments now. They are so personal. They are so full of vitriol. And when I first started writing a column, I would, especially if I spoke to large groups of women, inevitably one woman would get up and say, doesn't this ugly mail bother you? Don't the bad calls bother you? And I used to just shrug it off and say, oh, no. And then I realized, first of all, that's not true. Secondly, it does nothing to help other women who are trying to find courage in their lives. What I say now is, of course it bothers me. I just don't let it stop me. And I really remember what Maggie Kuhn said, the founder of the Gray Panthers. Speak your mind, even if your voice shakes. And because if we waited for the invitation to participate, women still wouldn't have the right to vote.
We should mention that Rush Limbaugh assumed that
Sherrod
Brown was an African American.
That's right. The same week that Fox said Sherrod Brown was a woman. So what I started doing in crowds is I just introduced myself and say, I'm actually, so now I'm married to an African American woman. I'm more liberal than you thought I was. Yeah.
You've been asked. You were asked many times on the campaign trail, can you still do your job as a columnist if your husband wins? And obviously you can and you are. But are there new rules? And are there places where your two careers intersect?
First of all, the only people who ever asked that were men. I have yet, and I think I said that in my book, it was never a woman who asked me that. And secondly, I know how to not write about something that Sherrod's actually actively involved in as a bill. I think sometimes we're still going to have some men who think I shouldn't have this job. But I figure if I'm setting a precedent, because there was no one like me, in terms of being married to a senator, if I'm setting the precedent I want to set is that you don't give up. You are not, as I say to some men when they write me, you seem to be confused about what marriage does to a woman. It doesn't suck the brain out of her and render her incapable of an independent thought. And I hope I've cleared things up for you.
Is there another book in the works?
Yes. This one appears to be fiction because Random House had encouraged me. Random House, I think, is right. There's very little modern day literature that focuses on the working class. So that's where I'm headed right now because I can tell all the things I couldn't put in this book, you can put it in fiction.
Well, I'm waiting for it.
Okay.
That's very good news. Our guest is Connie Schultz. Her new book, And His Lovely Wife, a memoir from the woman beside the man, chronicles her experiences on the campaign trail. The book is published by Random House. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me, Patty.
You're listening to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. A person dies by suicide every 16 minutes in the United States, claiming more than 32,000 lives each year. Next week in Center County and in communities across the country, volunteers will walk to prevent suicide, increase awareness about depression, and assist suicide survivors. Let's take note with Susan Kennedy. She is past Associate Director of University Health Services at Penn State and co-chair of the Center County Out of the Darkness Walk and Advisory Committee. The third annual Center County Walk will be held on Sunday, March 29th on the Penn State campus. Susan Kennedy, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You know a thing or two about how devastating a family member's suicide can be.
Yes. My brother took his life June 5th, 2005. So it's very much an important issue to me and to this community.
To this day, you don't know the details of your brother's death because it's too painful, but you do know the link. You recognize the link between his longtime battle with depression and with suicide. And in general, that seems to be the case.
Yeah. Most cases of suicide are related to depression and mental illness. I remember talking to him and saying, Robert, you're going to feel better. You are going to feel better. And there's a lot of information about, asking someone who is depressed, the question, you know, are you thinking of taking your life? And he had a lot of friends who asked him the question, but on one Sunday morning, he left the house, told his wife he's going for a run, and he never came back. They say that it's the kind of thing that, you know, it's too glib, but it's an easy solution to a very difficult problem. But we're missing him very much.
Nobody close to Robert thought he was suicidal. And you talked. You knew he was having problems. He talked with you about being close to the abyss, and you suggested that he take a leave of absence, and things seemed to be going well.
Yeah. The day that he called me and said he took the leave from work, he actually sounded the best he had ever sounded, and I was so pleased. But as the time for that leave to wind down, he was continuing to feel tremendous stress, and he didn't come out of it. So when I think about the words depression and I think about the word stress, people, you know, say, "Oh, I'm depressed because I nicked my car," or something like that. Depression is so much more than that. It's a feeling of gray that just doesn't lift.
It's interesting because people often talk about a suicide as having been prompted by a single episode, and it's rarely precipitated by a single event like the loss of a job or a right. girlfriend who dropped you. In 95% of the cases, there is a mental illness involved, most often depression. Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Depression is a physical illness as well as a mental illness. The physical signs of depression include lack of sleep, lack of desire to eat, a general graying of the entire world. And that's why it's so excellent that the walk is called Out of the Darkness, because depression is a very dark place. And to get out of that, the colors come back to your life.
Out of the Darkness also sort of signifies that we need to start talking about this, because this is more prevalent than I think most people
Absolutely.
Recognize. Give us some statistics, and even in Centre County.
Well, in Centre County, we've actually had in 2006, 2007, I believe 27 suicides. Those were reported by the county coroner. Suicide is the number two reason for death of college students and young adults. So it is much more prevalent than we would care to believe.
In the last 2 years in Centre County, you've had more than 1,000 people come out for this annual walk, which takes place all across the country.
Right.
You've raised over $40,000, and half of that money, I understand, will be used right here in Centre County.
Yes.
What are among the needs? What kinds of services would you like to see available to people in Centre County?
Well, when Robert died, I found that there, as you said, nobody talks about it, but also that I didn't know of any resources, the visibility of resources, the lack of a support network. As a Penn State employee, I was eligible for the employee assistance program, but they find that support groups are very helpful. Our Out of the Darkness money has been used to fund a support group in Centre County for the past year, and that's really important. The other thing that I think is really important is more education for teenagers about depression, for teachers, for counselors, for individuals in the community. And fortunately, we've been able to put that money to use in terms of creating a conference last year, doing teacher training, doing clergy training, doing a human service provider training. And as I keep telling people, that the important thing is that we talk about it.
Each suicide is different, and it leaves a different imprint. But is the psychological legacy of a suicide differ from other deaths? I mean, if your brother had died as the result of a heart attack, is it somehow different the way you continue on?
Yeah. I think it does. I think that everybody around him that loved him says, you know, couldn't I have done something different? Couldn't I have prevented it? What did I do that created it? I know we just came from visiting my parents, and, you know, they always say parents should never see their children die. And for them, it's like, what did we do wrong? So much guilt around the loss. And, you know, like my mother said, oh, Dad was going to do this and he didn't do it. And he continues to feel sad. And you could just see they stop every once in a while, look at a picture and feel such tremendous loss and remorse.
Survivors sometimes go to great lengths to deny suicide, even in the face of persuasive evidence. And I'm wondering if that has to do with the stigma that is still associated with suicide.
Absolutely. People are not willing to talk about it. We have T-shirts that we use for the walk, and my mom wears this T-shirt to when she goes and works out. And she says nobody asks about the shirt, and nobody makes a comment. So what happens is that people really are afraid to talk about it, so they're not prepared to ask the question. They're not prepared to look for information.
Susan Kennedy has been our guest. She is the co-chair of the Center County Out of the Darkness Walk and Advisory Committee. To find out more about the Penn State Walk, check out this website. It's outofthedarkness.org. Susan Kennedy, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Patty.
For Take Note, I'm Patty Satalia.
This program was produced in the studios of WPSU. If you have a story idea for Take Note, send it to WPSU, 120 Outreach Building, University Park, Pennsylvania, 16802, or email it to wpsu@psu.edu. This has been a presentation of Penn State Public Broadcasting.